Welcome to Dialogues with Creators. I am your host, Barbara Tucker. Part of my job as the chair of the Department of Communication, Performing Arts, and Foreign Language at Dalton State College is to think of ways to engage the students. A colleague of mine, Ryan Reese, and I decided that we would hold an independent film series this year. We've asked filmmakers from the area who have had success with their films at festivals across the country to come and screen their films. You've heard some of them on this podcast already. Today, we'll be hearing from Emily Steele of Jasper, Tennessee, who created Goodnight August and screened it for us recently. Stay tuned. I want to say good evening to Emily Steele. This is the first time that we have talked at any length about her career in film, but it's not the first time we've met. She has been part of our advisory board for our film studies students and program at Dalton State. And she also screened her film, Goodnight August, last week for our students and folks in the community. So I'm going to start with just asking you a kind of a corny question that I hear a lot with film has to do with superhero movies. What is your origin story, Emily?
Well, first off, thank you so much for having me on. I'm super excited to be here talking to you. And as far as the origin of becoming a filmmaker, I would say that, ever since I honestly can remember, I think that making up stories in my mind and, kind of using storytelling as a creative outlet, I think I've always done that as far back as I can remember. And it was probably around my senior year of high school that I really decided that maybe what I was doing was in a line with filmmaking. And so there definitely wasn't, a moment where I decided I wanted to be a filmmaker, but maybe discovered that a filmmaker is kind of what I'd been all along. And so storytelling in any aspect and medium is something that I'm greatly passionate about. And so I would say that's probably my origin.
Okay. I like how you said that it wasn't something you just decided to do, but it's something you realized you'd been doing all along.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. It's almost like, in many ways, it's almost as if, like, I feel as if, like, I'm a creative person, whether I want to be or not. And I definitely want to be. But in many ways, I feel like the way that I cope up with things, the way that I look at life, the way that I look at my own life, I feel like it's always kind of through a creative lens. So I definitely feel like I'm maybe deeply wired that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you went to college at
where? Chattanooga State. I was a part of the film program there for 2 years. And I graduated with a degree in media technology. And that was kind of where I met a lot of people. I met the cinematographer to both of the larger films that I've done, Christian Ames, through that program. And had access to the equipment, and that was kind of how I was able to learn the fundamentals of filmmaking and make some student projects that I really enjoyed. So, definitely thankful for that program. And then, of course, that was how I was connected with you guys at Dalton State. Met a lot of wonderful people so far. So,
yeah, my understanding is that program, they have one class that is doing a student film, right, or doing a actually making a film.
I think that I remember, like, when I was there, we had the film production and TV class. I want to say I probably said that wrong, but part of our learning was actually making a film. Mm-hmm. Which in my opinion, of course, is always the best way to learn is by doing. I was lucky enough to be able to make some of my student shorts through that class. So it was actually a requirement to make a film. So I learned a lot there. That class is still going and they're making films and that sort of thing. And it's all done by Chris Willis. Mm-hmm. And I learned a lot from him as well. So
So what was your first film?
Let's see, my very first film was a really terrible stop motion that I think I made right out of high school. And it was supposed to be kind of like an alien stop motion. And I kind of made the little puppets myself out of aluminum wire. And a friend of mine, him and I, we put it together. And that was probably, I guess, my sort of first film. And then after that, I made a film called Train of Thought. That was probably my first student film out of the college program that I was in. And yeah, honestly, those films I feel like were some of the most fun that I've done thus far, because, you know, it's kind of like when you're first starting something, the pressure is kind of off, like you kind of know that it's going to be bad. And so, you know, you can just make it and not have to worry about making it perfect. You're just kind of learning. And so, yeah.
You know, it's interesting you said it was stop motion there. You may know this. I was looking at going to a movie the other night, and I was looking at the Fandango, you know, and there's a movie called Stop Motion, and it's a horror movie, and it looks grotesque.
Right. Grotesque. I'm so interested in seeing that one. I saw the poster for it, and the concept just sounds so incredibly interesting to me. I really cannot wait to see that one.
I think it's kind of like the idea of having a ventriloquist dummy, and the dummy takes over your personality or something.
See, that's like right up my alley as far as like types of films that I enjoy. So,
So you like horror movies?
I do. I love horror movies. That typically the things that I write kind of lean towards horror a lot of the time, whether intentional or not.
Where do you think that comes from? They scare me. I can't deal with them. Thrillers are fine, but when there's anything that's like really, I don't know, or bloody stuff, I just. Right.
Yeah, I would say I definitely agree. Like, I'm definitely not like a blood and gore kind of person. And yeah, I honestly, I think the kind of films that I probably enjoy the most are probably thriller, psychological thriller, suspense. Mm-hmm. I think that like I love when horror is done, I guess you could say, and maybe like and I say this, but at the same time, you know, I'm the kind of person I like to make, you know, help my friends make zombie films in the backyard, you know, so I'm definitely not like an intellectual high, you know, filmmaker or pretentious or anything, but I think it's really cool when I see like, I know like a lot of A24 films. A lot of those films are, you know, horror based, but maybe they'll be like kind of an allegory for like mental health or something like that. I think that's, you know, always interesting to see.
Okay. So you screened Goodnight August for us the other night. Was that your first major production, or did you have one prior to that?
So I had a film prior, and the title of it is Counterpole, and it ran for, I want to say, 54, 53 minutes, and that was unintentional. It was never meant to be a feature-length film, but it kind of ended up being that way in post-production. That film, I would say, was probably, it was the first film that I did that wasn't a student short, and I learned so much from that film. But I would say that with Goodnight August, it was sort of the first film that I felt like maybe I was stepping more into my own individual kind of style, hopefully, as an artist, and, you know, just writing from maybe a more personal place with that one.
Mm-hmm. It's called Counterpole.
Yes. That was the title of the film I did before Goodnight mm-hmm. August. And it was a really challenging film in many ways, just because of it kind of took on so much spearheading it, you know, because you have to be the director, the producer, and everything else. And it was a lot. I think I bit off a little more than I can chew, but I think it was worth it in the end to learn.
Where could somebody see that if they wanted to see it?
So as of now, the only thing that is up is the trailer for that film. I kind of need to find the perfect place to put it. I'm kind of in a place right now where I'm kind of switching the content of my website.
Yeah.
Because for the past like 4 or 5 years, I've been kind of filming and photographing weddings. and really enjoyed that. But now my income is coming from the 9-to-5 job I have now. So my website will soon contain, you know, all the content from the narrative work that I've done. And so I'm kind of trying to, you know, transition everything over to that. And so maybe I'll have the film up on my website.
Okay. So that brings us to Good Night August, which was fascinating. And I'll just say that one of the fascinating things was, of course, it was black and white, no color at all, which is unusual. And I'm sure that was, we'll talk about why that was. And because most of the student, and not student, but the independent films that we see around here are set in the mountains somehow, because we're in the mountains. And this was in the plains. It was, you know, I thought, she's out in the Midwest.
Wow.
I can get Kansas enough to know those, how boring it is, but I'm not supposed to say that. I mean, if you go through, oh, Kansas, my word, you know, 400 miles of nothing. It's terrible. But you went out to Kansas to make this. So what was your impetus? What was your inspiration for Good Night August?
Mm-hmm. Thank you. So the inspiration, I would say, I'll start maybe aesthetically, and then I'll kind of get into like the content of maybe the story. So aesthetically, I was blending two of my favorite styles of film, which would be, you know, Western, wide open spaces. I've always been a huge fan of Westerns. And then the other would be film noir, black and white. I kind of really took a lot of inspiration from like the early pioneers of film, like 1910, 1920s. Cabinet of Dr. Caligari was a huge inspiration for me. German Expressionism is a really big influence as well. And so, you know, aesthetically, really wanting to blend those two styles. Yeah. And then as far as the story, I had a lot of fascination at the time with the subconscious mind and Carl Jung's, you know, he speaks a lot about the shadow self. And I thought, you know, maybe it would be interesting to see like a cowboy character kind of face off in like a Western standoff style, only he's, you know, kind of against himself, you know, his own shadow. And so I kind of built the story off of that idea and that inspiration.
Okay. And the thing about Westerns is that they don't usually, you know, the iconic character is the, you say the strong, silent type kind of thing where you don't really see their internal life very much. Whereas in noir, you're more likely to, you know, but
that's interesting. It's interesting that you mentioned that because kind of during the creative process of, you know, writing the story, it was almost as if maybe originally the main character, August, he was sort of like maybe the Clint Eastwood kind of cowboy, whereas kind of the more I started writing and putting more of the personal aspect of it in there, I realized that maybe he's less of a Clint Eastwood and maybe more of a Charlie Chaplin. You know, he's kind of a nervous wreck, and he's, I kind of wanted him to showcase a lot of emotion. Whereas like, you know, in a lot of older Westerns, of course, like it's the stoic cowboy. Okay. And that was cool at that time. But with this, I really wanted August to show, you know, his emotional side for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think of John Wayne, you know, not that he was a great actor, but he was very iconic in those movies,
right?
In The Searchers or in Stagecoach, you know, that he's not one dimensional, but he's, you don't really see inside of his soul,
right?
You know, he hates Indians, but you don't really understand why he hates the Indians and The Searchers. Mm-hmm. And that kind of thing.
Right.
So how did you just go about doing a film of that? I mean, because it's a long film and it wasn't something you could just do in a, you know, a couple of weekends.
Right. What's funny is that as far as actual shooting and production, it actually was a couple of weekends. So we did the... but, you know, of course, like the pre-production, the post-production, everything in between was like 2.5 years. But of course, so we split it into two production shoots. We did the interior scenes, which actually shot in Cleveland, Tennessee, at the Red Clay Park, which had a beautiful Western style cabin there. We were able to get lots of props and stuff from the inside of there. And my dad actually rides horses for a living. And so, well, not for a living, but it's his passion. He loves to ride horses. And so he actually was able to give us a lot of props and things like that. And he actually taught Christopher Wilson, the actor who played August, actually taught him how to throw a lasso and everything. So I got really, really lucky there, of course, having the dad that already has the cowboy knowledge. And then for the second half of the film, of course, we went out to Kansas. We made the road trip out there. And I was really, really stubborn because I had a lot of people suggesting, you know, for the exterior scenes to use an open field around here. And of course, I absolutely love the beautiful Tennessee mountains. But, you know, I was really wanting to sell the idea of August being stuck in a nightmare dream, otherworldly kind of place. And I felt, you know, maybe to achieve that, we really needed to be like an out, you know, wide open space, big wide open field that looks like it's never ending. And so the closest I think we could get to that without hopping on a plane was Kansas. So
It would have been really hard to film because you can't get away from an horizon of mountains around here. You know.
Right. And all the places I found were, you know, tons of open fields around here, of course, but of course, mm-hmm. you had the mountains in the distance. And at the time, we really just had zero way, I think, of at least like, you know, within our budget to erase the mountains in the distance. And of course, like I would much have preferred, you know, going out there and getting the real experience. And mm-hmm. I actually really enjoyed Kansas. I enjoyed being, you know, out further west, and all the people there were wonderful. So,
So as far as your casting, what does Christopher do? Because he's very good.
Absolutely. I want to say that I found most of the actors through Facebook and backstage. Christopher is actor. He's a working actor. I'm not too sure what he does as far as a current job right now. I think that he's, you know, like many creatives like ourselves, you know, he's got his main job and then he kind of does the creative stuff on the side. But yeah, everyone, all the cast and crew, absolutely incredibly talented people. I was so lucky to work with all of them. Mm-hmm. He definitely brought August to life. Mm-hmm. And as soon as I saw his acting photo, I felt like he kind of looked exactly the way that I'd imagined August to look. And so, you know, I just kind of really, I think I don't remember if he auditioned or if I sent him a message directly, but yeah, very, very talented actor he is.
Yeah, he was professional. He, you know, I could tell he was not just somebody that had acted a little bit, you know. And is the girl that played his wife, was she related to him?
That is his actual wife.
Okay.
Her name is Brianna Wilson. They were actually married. And they were kind of like, to me, I felt like they both had the look I was really going for.
Yeah.
It definitely worked out because, you know, with them already kind of being together, it made things easier. So. Mm-hmm.
And you said for the special effects, you hired a person in England.
Yeah, so we had, for the Shadow Man mask, we actually had Cody Rudge. He's based out of Nashville. So he made our mask, incredibly, incredibly talented. He is. And then we actually found an animator, she does incredible animation work, and we found her on Fiverr of all places, which I feel like it's kind of hit or miss. But yeah, I didn't realize until I sent the first payment, it converted to pounds, that she's based out of the UK. And it was really, really fun working with her and, you know, having, being able to, you know, maybe expand my horizons a little and work with someone out of the country. That was really fun. So
yeah. Has it been shown outside of the country? I mean, since she's in it, she's what part of it?
Let's see, because I'm trying to think about, you know, all it, because I submitted to so many film festivals and that I know of, I don't believe it has. Actually, I take that back. It did screen in Toronto.
Oh,
but that's one of the furthest we've been.
Yeah.
So
let's talk about that, this film festival thing.
Yeah.
I know there's a website called Film Freeway. Is that something that you would use to look for film festivals?
Oh, absolutely. That is my main way of discovering festivals. And I kind of learned the hard way on there that even though the majority of the festivals are legitimate festivals, there are some scam festivals on there that I kind of had to learn the hard way. However, it is a really, really perfect gateway to find, to not only find like every film festival that you can submit to, but just to see like when the due dates are and certain requirements and things, that really just makes it easy to discover all those things. So
it is an issue that there are a lot of, you know, writing contests and they'll charge something. Do all the film festivals charge something?
The majority of them definitely do. There's a couple that are free, but it's very few and far between. But I found that, you know, obviously the earlier that you submit, often the cheaper, and also your better chances of getting accepted, I feel. I think it's really good to try to submit by, you know, the early bird deadline for a lot of the film festivals, because, you know, it's the first batch of films that, you know, they're seeing. And so the later that you wait, the more they charge you. So,
okay. Do you have any idea, like, for that festival in Toronto, how many films actually were submitted to it? Would you have that information?
I am not sure. I mean, probably thousands. The one that I was a part of, it was the Toronto International Women's Film Festival.
Okay.
So, you know, women filmmakers from all over the world, thousands submitted. And, you know, we were definitely lucky enough to be nominated in one of the categories. I can't quite remember which one, but it was really special to be a part of that, even if we didn't get accepted. You know. It's definitely an honor whenever you realize how many people are submitting and you're lucky enough, you know, to get in. So
with that one, I would assume be one of the big ones you submitted to. Are there smaller ones?
I know that, you know, big or small, you know, kind of far away or local. It's kind of interesting. It really just depends on like the quality of the festival, because, you know, there are so many huge festivals out there that you can submit to and, you know, maybe not get a whole lot out of, whereas like, you know, you could maybe go to like a local festival and you know, be more enriched by that experience. So I've definitely had a mix of the two. But I was actually lucky enough to be able to go out to Texas to the World Fest Houston Film Festival there, which is one of the oldest film festivals in America. We won an award out there. We were really, really blessed to be able to go out there and do that. And so that I want to say that was one of the most amazing festivals I've been to. A lot of beautiful, amazing people out there. And then, of course, recently went to the Nashville Film Festival, a wonderful festival. That was really excited to see, you know, my film on the big screen there. So,
okay. So we're talking, you've done quite a few of these festivals then.
Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, is this an issue? You send them something electronically, or you send them a website, or you send them an actual flash drive, or what?
So the way that Film Freeway works is you actually upload your film to Film Freeway. And then once you go through and you submit to film festivals, and you can actually submit to several ones at a time, you can just click, you know, submit, and you put your film, and the file is oftentimes, you know, they can just get it straight from Film Freeway. If they have like different requirements, oftentimes they'll kind of clarify that on the actual page. Like they'll say like, you know, we actually require you to send the actual physical file, or, you know, a private Vimeo or YouTube link. But most of the time they can get it straight off of Film Freeway, which definitely makes things easier.
So Film Freeway is sort of a clearinghouse as well.
Absolutely.
as well as a place for, okay. I didn't realize that. I assumed they just were kind of a listing service as opposed to a place where you could actually submit them. That's pretty cool. Okay.
Right.
Okay. So do you have any funny stories from when you were doing Goodnight August?
So many, you know, the biggest one that comes to mind is whenever we were getting ready to film the first weekend, for the interior shots, my cinematographer, Christian, sends me a photo of a positive COVID test 2 days before we're supposed to film. And then of course I had a complete total, you know, panic attack until, cause we had done so much preparation and, you know, we had basically, like, we were able to go into the actual cabin and do like so many test shots. We had a full shot list. We knew exactly what we were doing going in. But we actually had our first AC, I want to say. Thomas, he stepped up to the plate and was able to kind of take over that weekend as DP. And so, I'm trying to think, like, I know, like, going out to Kansas was definitely an adventure in itself. I kind of call it my Wizard of Oz experience because it just entailed so many bizarre and strange feelings. Like, I don't even think we were going to go until I decided maybe 2 days before, and we had to rent a van, and you know, there were close to where we were filming, there were like these gigantic bison, and so we had to like keep a very good distance to keep our safety there. And we had to shorten our shot list by quite a bit because there was a potential for rain. Mm-hmm. A lot of things that made that weekend very, very bizarre.
The one shot in the film where it's like mountains and there's a cloud, you know, the mountains are above the clouds. Where was that shot?
So that is actually a green screen effect that we did. Oh. So we actually filmed Christopher in front of a green screen at Chattanooga State, and then we actually placed that background in there, or Christian placed that background in there. I really love the way that shot turned out, but I think that I may, going forward, I might potentially change the backdrop to something a little bit more, you know, kind of getting rid of those pesky mountains that, you know, I'm always wanting to get rid of. So.
You know, it's interesting what you just said. You said you made it sound like that your film is still in process.
Right. Yeah. And it's crazy because, you know, even just the other night when I was screening the festival at Dalton State, I had gotten a couple of notes that were things that I maybe kind of already felt like I definitely wanted to change. And kind of, you know, for the sake of like, you know, getting your film out there and submitting to festivals and things like that, you kind of just will submit what you have. And of course, like, I'm very happy with the way that it is now. But, you know, one of the things that I would definitely like to change, you know, I mentioned the green screen background, but also maybe the voice of Shadow Man. I kind of would like to, you know, play around with that, play around with some more effects with his voice and kind of make it maybe a little less windy and whispery. Maybe it's just so kind of it's easier to listen. And so, yeah, definitely, you know, when it comes to independent film work, you're always maybe kind of wanting to go back in and fix something. So,
yeah. Okay. Well, you know, it's that way for just about anything nowadays because everything's digital. So you can change it, which in the past, you know, I mean, if changing anything after the fact would have been really, really hard in the analog time in books or movies or anything. So it's interesting because one of the questions I've always had about art, any type of art, is when do you know when it's finished? You know, I'm editing two novels right now, and I'm like, I've got to get them done, but they'll never be done. I'll always want to do some question, you know? And so I look at the beautiful, you know, paintings. I love to go to museums and look at, you know, paintings and things. I'm like, how did they know they were done?
Right. And, you know, honestly, I mean, of course, they say, like, you know, the Mona Lisa was never properly, you know, finished. Yeah. And it's one of those things like, yeah, you just never you never really know. I, at least like for me, like I know that there's probably a lot of artists out there that kind of will definitively know. I feel like when it comes to something maybe like film or painting, even there's so many aspects to it. And maybe like with a painting, there's like shading and different, you know, details that you would like to add. And you can keep adding detail for the end of time. You know, I feel like it might be the same thing for film. You know, you just want to keep going again and adding certain things, or you know, if you're kind of in a place in your career where you're kind of still learning, you really want to, once you learn something or you kind of, you know, grow or you think about a different aspect to the story, you want to go back and change it or fix it, you know. So that's definitely happened.
Yeah. I have heard people say, you know, it's finished when you're sick of it.
Oh, yeah. And that happens. You know, you get so sick of it. Oh, yeah.
Or when it's, you know, when it's due, when it has to be turned in or, you know, whatever.
Right.
What's your next project? Are you still working on Goodnight August?
So I'm kind of simultaneously working on a couple of things. I think that, you know, for Goodnight August, the purpose of the short film was to work as a pitch for a potential miniseries. And so right now I'm kind of in the writing stages of, you know, maybe getting like 8 to 10 maybe episodes of that going. And, you know, that's definitely something that I would very, very much love to do. And then, so kind of just finishing up and working on Goodnight August while also kind of thinking of some newer ideas and that sort of thing. I'm sure you understand, like, kind of as a creative, you kind of bounce around, and I'm definitely, it's hard for me to kind of stick to one thing at a time. So,
So what are some of your favorite movies? I was interested in asking you that.
Yeah. So, I want to say, like, because I know, like, you know, there are so many films. I mean, just, and not even just films, but just artworks and you know, musicians and all sorts of things that have kind of inspired me over the years. But just maybe, like, more so recently, you know, maybe, like, in the past 2 or 3 years, like, I've really been majorly fascinated with the films of Andrei Tarkovsky and... really love Kurosawa. Really beautiful films, and you know, so many films of theirs just to really delve into and study. And then, of course, I mentioned kind of like the early films, like I really love A Trip to the Moon, and you know, The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari, and The Night of the Hunter is a really big one for me. Absolutely adore that film. You know, that film was kind of inspired by the German Expressionism.
It's way creepy. I mean,
oh yeah. Honestly, I would say like that has to be, even at its time, it is one of the most surreal and disturbing, creepy films ever. You know, just the character. And I'm forgetting his name, but the guy who plays the
Robert character
creature, his character is terrifying. But yeah, that I want to say, like, if I had just like, and honestly, probably like The Night of the Hunter, Paper Moon, Peter Bogdanovich. That's a really big one for me. Always adored that film. Those are two really big ones.
It's interesting that. The Night of the Hunter, that was the only film that Charles Laughton directed. He never directed another one, you know? And I just thought
that that was so interesting. It's part of the reasons why I'm so fascinated just with him as a director and a person, because he made that film. And in my eyes, that film is just so flawless. He made that film and then it was like he was done, you know? Really, really interesting.
Yeah. So it was what he wanted to do, I guess, and that was it.
Right.
So, yeah. Okay. So you like black and white?
Oh, yeah. A lot of black and white film.
All the movies you mentioned were black and white, weren't they?
They were. And, you know, definitely, I guess, aesthetically, I pulled so much from those films. Paper Moon is just, you know, as far as like the framing and the blocking and the cinematography of that film, in my eyes, just completely flawless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like black and white, too. I would prefer to watch a black and white. And I'm not 100% sure, except that when I was a kid, because I'm a lot younger, a lot older than you, everything media was black and white. You know, we didn't have a color TV until late 70s, like late 60s. Yeah. And, you know, most people didn't. And so just everything was black and white. And then as I got older, it just seemed to me that the black and white allowed you to get into the story more. To me, color distracts me. And maybe I have ADHD or something, but color tends to distract me. And also at the that time when I was a kid, the color was so... Now, a lot of times you'll see more muted colors in films. But back then, it was the Technicolor thing, and it was so... You know, the color was so clean and fake that it just didn't... I don't know. Sometimes I look at it, and it's like creepy. It's so saturated.
It's so vibrant.
Yeah.
And that's the reason I'll mention too, like, I guess this kind of relates back to the Kansas thing too, is, you know, we were filming out there. We played around with the color because you're still kind of in the process of like, well, you know, we technically could still make a version in color. And it just, you know, the wide open space, it, you know, looked like a Coen Brothers movie or something. It was so beautiful, the color. And then it was hard to make it black and white, but at the same time, it kind of felt like so necessary for the film. And of course, with the interior shots, it had to be black and white or nothing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you mentioned like it, there almost being like a creepy aspect to the color. I immediately thought of course, The Wizard of Oz and how, you know, one of my favorite directors is David Lynch, and he kind of describes that as one of the most terrifying, surreal films he's ever seen, because it kind of just feels like a fever dream or something.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, when I was a kid, I could never watch it past the Flying Monkeys. That a lot of people in my generation, those Flying Monkeys freaked us out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the movie itself, it has a lot of surreal, weird stuff in it. I love it. I don't need it, but it's, you know, I'll often say, you know, I'll tell my students, I'll ask them how many have seen it, and most of them haven't. And I'm like, go home with me and find that movie. It explains everything. It was so used, the iconography of it was so used in so many other movies, you know, and things like that. So, yeah, even today, I prefer to watch old movies that are in black and white. You know, I love TCM, but it's mostly black and white things I watch. And I'm a big fan of film noir, which is kind of weird. My public persona to most people would wonder why, but I just love that. I love Hitchcock, although he wasn't really film noir. And,
me too.
You know, and those kinds of things, although I preferred his older movies from like the 30s and 40s than some of the 50s things that, again, were so saturated in color. And he got a little weird with women, too. So,
yeah. And it's crazy because like a lot of it's like maybe at the time, like a lot of the films from like the 1930s, 40s and sometimes 50s, like the horror films that were kind of made during that time, I feel like they were made to be a certain kind of horror. Whereas now, and you go back and you watch those films, and it's creepier in maybe like a different way. Mm-hmm. To me, it's almost like there's something terrifying about, you know, very, very older looking effects and things like that are sometimes very surreal and more terrifying than something that can be achieved today. You know, and honestly, like going back and watching the films of the pioneers, the 1910s and 20s, when you watch those films and you can understand that everyone who worked on that film is now gone, Mm-hmm. There's something really surreal and kind of terrifying about that, but also beautiful. And so, you know, I was definitely, you know, heavily inspired by that.
I knew what I was going to ask you. Did you film in color, but then changed it to black and white, or did you film it in black and white?
Yeah, so we filmed it. We filmed it with our monitors, with sort of like a color grade over the monitor, so we can kind of see like what it would look like in black and white. But of course, like the raw footage itself was in color.
Yeah. Yeah. Is it possible to film something in black and white? Is that even possible?
I would say so. I think that there's probably like filters or maybe like some in-camera settings that you could maybe film something in black and white. Yeah.
I think so. You can't buy black and white film because it's digital. Anyway. Everything's digital.
Right. I don't know. Like, I know like for digital, it might be kind of more like a setting. And of course, you can always like, I've always wanted to film on like actual film. If it wasn't so expensive, that would be something I would absolutely love to do.
Okay. Because I think I've read that in the old days, they filmed in color, but then change it to black and white because you can tell the difference in the color in the black and white that it, you know, that they're different colors, you know, mm-hmm. they're not just, right. It's not just something dark and something white. It might have been red, but it's not something seen as red, but the fact that it was red in the original shows in the black and white. Does that make sense?
Oh yeah, definitely. And that was actually something that they did for Paper Moon. From what I understand, I'm pretty sure they filmed on an infrared camera. So that they really wanted like the black and the whites to like pop in maybe a different way, like be less of like a grayscale. Cause when you film an infrared, you turn it black and white, it's going to have less of a gray look and kind of like make the blacks and the whites pop a lot more. And that was something I actually had to study a lot with Goodnight August. You know, just the way that, you know, you layer certain things. And of course, like, you know, when we were out in Kansas, it was important to have, you know, the shot of the widow in the distance. Of course, like, you know, widows, they wear black, obviously, but having, you know, the character in all black so that it would kind of stand up against the white background. And then, of course, vice versa. Like with August, we had the white t-shirt and the dark cabin. Sometimes it's just like as simple as that, you know, kind of layering the black and the white on top of each other in a certain way. Definitely like the colors that you film in definitely affect the way that the black and white will end up looking in the end.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And that's the area of filmmaking that, you know, I can get into story and acting and screenplay and all that. But when it gets to the technical stuff of film and light, aspect ratio, I know what it is, but I don't know what it is.
Right. I've learned some, but I definitely am not a technical minded person for the most part. It's definitely fascinating to me, but a lot of it definitely goes over my head. So,
well, it doesn't even get close to my head. So, we have been talking with Emily Steele, who lives in Jasper, Tennessee, right? And she's a filmmaker. Her most recent film that's going through the festivals is Goodnight August. She screened that for us at Dalton State on February 21st, and it was very enjoyable. Thank you for being with us today, Emily.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me. It's been awesome.
Great. Bye-bye.